This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
We're checking in with State Representative Cedric Hayden. Find out about things going on with the Oregon State Legislature. Clearly, Cedric, it's been a busy time for you folks in Salem.
Yeah, things are moving along here in Salem for us. We have floor session at least 4 days a week, and our committees are continuing to move on. As we've talked before, there's a House and a Senate chamber deadline, so everything from the House is moving through the floor and going over to the Senate, and everything from the Senate is moving from that side over to our side of the chamber.
So yesterday, the House passed Senate Bill 282, extending a payment period for residential renters. What's your take on that?
So that bill had a base bill that was based on. During the third special session that we came in, we extended some rent payment moratorium or some opportunities for renters to delay their payment. And I did actually support the first one that came in to give people some breathing room during the pandemic. And then this would extend that original one. I didn't support the Senate Bill 282 because I think there's a point that we really need to get to back to a level of normalcy. And there are a lot of small landlords out there that have provided housing for folks that just aren't going to be able to extend this from February 30th, 2021, if I can get my dates right, to February 2022. So basically extending out the lack of payment for another year, basically, for these landlords is really, I think, counterintuitive on trying to provide housing. We have a pretty hot housing market right now. And so I believe that if we do this, and it did pass and will probably be enacted, that we're going to actually hurt our housing abilities through landlords, particularly small landlords that can't afford to go without that payment for that additional year, and will really be forced to sell that rental property that they have. And so I think that this extends it too far for my comfort level, and supported the original base bill, but not the extension.
My understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is that renters still ultimately have to pay all the back rent they owe. It seems like as if this is done for a number of months longer, you're going to find yourself digging out of a very large hole, which would be very hard for most people to do.
So that's exactly right. And, you know, some of the discussions that we've had, so there's a couple of things that were promised here to landlords. One, that they would be able to apply for and get that loan payment. Now, I didn't like the fact that it was a 20% discount, but that the state would actually pay that missing rent in some cases with the right application. Well, we did put money towards doing that to help stabilize the landlords. But the fact is that the state has not sent $1 out of those funds that were, I believe it was $80 million that was allotted for that, hasn't sent the first dollar out. And here they're extending this for another year. And I just don't see this as plausible. I see there are landlords as, you know, a small business, particularly for those smaller 2, 3, 4 unit owners, are incredibly important to our community so that we do have housing. And I think this is stretching them too far, and it's just breaking the camel's back. And so with the lack of funding not happening that was promised, that we were promised in the legislature that they would get that out quickly to the landlords with the right application, with that not happening yet, and extending this another year, I mean, what's the opportunity for a landlord to be made whole? We're not, and I might point out that we're not exempting their tax on that property for the landlord. We're not exempting, you know, anything upkeep on the house or property, which we shouldn't do, but we should be looking at giving a tax exemption during this period of time. So we're not doing anything to help the landlord. And, you know, unfortunately, I believe a lot, some of them are going to be forced to say, I can't do it. and have to put that on the market. And then, you know, will that come back in housing or not? But I think it will actually decrease our housing capacity rather than increase it.
Have you heard a reason from state officials in terms of why the money that was approved to go to the landlords has not gone out?
You know, we have heard, you know, that they just can't get it functioned out, kind of like the same excuse that the employment department, you know, is still behind, but was so far behind that they just don't have the technology to get it out. I'm not sure that I really accept all of those excuses. It just hasn't been done. You know, the promise for it doesn't help these small business owners that have a couple of cottages that they rent out.
Want to ask you about another piece of legislation, really kind of an overall funding plan. House and Senate Democrats put a release out yesterday saying they're prioritizing $9.3 billion in school funding. What can you tell us about that?
So there's a lot of pieces moving here right now. The governor came in with a recommended budget of $9.1 billion. Now, this is what comes from the state legislature. This isn't what or the general fund, if you will. This is what it doesn't include what comes from your county property taxes and stuff, which ramp that up by multiple billions of dollars. But the governor wanted $9.1 billion. The co-chairs have revised that to 9.3, and so there's an increase for the co-chairs, which are the folks that do the actual budgeting. That my understanding is that bill will be before the Education Committee to have a vote on that, and then will come to the House floor. Now, the interesting thing here is that there's, and this is fairly new information, I don't have it all parsed out yet, but the federal help with this, and my understanding is this is on top of the existing ARPA funds or the American Recovery Act funds, is an additional $93 billion coming federally, nationally, for school funding under the concept of we need more funding to help the kids get caught back up from basically the year or maybe 2 years, you know, however long we extend this. And so I've reached out to I serve on general government, Ways and Means General Government, and I reached out and have been told that Oregon's portion of that will be $1.3 billion on top of the $9.3 billion. So you're really looking at, with those federal funds, $10.6 billion coming for education, plus about $2.5 billion from the property taxes and stuff that we usually see. We usually see, when we vote on a $9-plus billion, it's usually a $12-plus billion budget, if that makes sense. So education funding is looking like, if you include the feds, the local property tax that go to it, is looking like it will be held harmless and actually increased.
Oregon OSHA recently extended its COVID-19 rule permanently with no end date. And that seems to be a bit of a controversial move.
So it was a little bit of a controversial move. If you've been tracking that closely, our House Republican caucus under Leader Drazen and the Senate Republican caucus leader, Senator Girard, sent a letter into OSHA to ask, okay, where is your authority to change the rules? So basically we're talking about, I think it was 2011, the legislature changed or gave broad authority under the governor office in times of a crisis. Now, they were thinking earthquake. They were thinking, you know, if something major happens, that would be, you know, a event that would be a period of time that could be handled within a 6-month period of time. Well, this pandemic has dragged on. And so we asked OSHA, where's your authority to do this rule? And the response, I'll boil it down, was basically, we feel like we have the authority to do that. We have the support of the governor to change the rule and extend it permanently, you know, until the end of the pandemic, but basically permanently. And that, you know, if that doesn't sit well with folks, basically the courts are your resource to challenge that. Well, we know that would take a long time to go through the courts. And so there was a hearing on it in the legislature. And I'm not in that committee, but we, Leader Drazen, had asked that OSHA come and testify on that point, that they felt like they had the authority to do it and they were going to go forward with it, regardless of input from testimony and whatnot. And they didn't show up. They didn't show up for the hearing. The chair, I believe it was Representative Colby, didn't bring them in. And so this kind of just happened in, you know, behind the scenes, not with the input of the legislature. And my personal feeling is that there is appropriate for the governor to have some crisis management. But when we're in a pandemic that goes on for an extended period of time, there's other branches of government. The legislative branch of the government needs to be, and I believe at this this point, should be engaged in this decision making, because those are the voters. Not only do the voters vote on the governor, but they vote on 90 other legislators that should have input on this.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. State Representative Cedric Hayden with us. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1247 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248 at News Radio, 1240 KQEN. Lars Larson coming at 1. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, part of KQEN Local Talk at 4. That's ahead later today on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County for May, Mental Health Awareness Month. Cherie Barnstable, the Mental Health Clinical Director for ADAPT Integrated Healthcare, a mental health topic and more on tomorrow's program. We're with State Representative Cedric Hayden just off the House floor before we began this afternoon. Governor yesterday announced a vaccination goal of 70% of those age 16 and older. What was your take on yesterday's information from the governor's office?
So we have, I serve as the vice chair of the COVID committee, where we have a lot of discussions about what is the state's approach to getting to some level of normalcy. And in the committee, I talked with Patrick Allen, director of OHA, and Dr. Seidlinger, who's a pediatrician that works with Patrick Allen on some of these COVID-related issues. And they come testify once a week to our committee. And I keep saying to them, when are we going to get out of the stay home, don't kill your neighbor advertising campaign that we all saw very prominently earlier on here, and get to the, you know, get out and get educated, and if you can, get a vaccination and get us back to work campaign. And so he's been saying, well, it will come. And one of the things that I've really been pushing for in that committee is to have the goalpost quit changing. I feel like, you know, there's been a lot of changing with these risk categories, and then, you know, well, if the hospital goes over 300, then, you know, you're going to go back to extreme list. Well, no, actually, if it's 15%, not 14.9, then we can lower you. So I just feel like the goalposts have been changing a lot. I think that's really difficult for businesses and individuals to understand. So I've been really pushing for, you know, something that can be a set goalpost to reach. Now, the 70%, you know, to say that, okay, this is applicable across the state, you know, once you're at 70%, then I'll drop your risk areas. I don't know that that really is going to be equitable across all the different counties. And so I have concern with, you know, kind of one size fits all. You got to get to 70%, you know, when the rural areas are much more difficult to make that reach and potentially have more of the herd immunity concept with it. And so one thing I've been talking with Patrick Allen about is, when are we going to get to, you know, some testing options that people can go and say, you know, I was really sick 3 months ago. I want to find out if I have some natural immunity to this. And so far, the Oregon Health Authority has not been open to the idea of people getting educated on whether they have any natural immunity to it or not. And I think there's a role to be played there.
And in that light with the 70% goal and all the risk categories, county levels being all tied to this, do you think it's going to be accepted very well? What have you heard so far?
Well, I hope they don't change the rules again. I think the 70% mark is going to be difficult to reach and document, and so I think it's going to extend out for a lot of our particular rural counties, you know, leave them in limbo. Okay, what risk category are we at? We've got these cases down, but, you know, we don't have the document to show the 70%. So I do have some concern about, you know, saying, well, you've got to be at 70% regardless of, you know, the COVID activity in your community.
Now, recently, information's been out about the ARPA funds and some of the ideas that legislators have. Tell us more about that.
So that's interesting. And in your local paper in the News Review there, it kind of goes over that. And so just to catch people up, one of the things that the co-chairs or the budget folks are doing this time, now keep in mind there is a lot of federal, billions and billions of dollars of federal funds coming into the state that we haven't seen before. They took $240 million of those federal funds, and they split it 90 ways. And they said, okay, Senator so-and-so, you're going to be allocating or directing with your constituents' input $4 million of it. And then state representative, there's 60 of us. So they chopped that $4 million in half and said, okay, state representative on the House side, you're going to be working with your constituents to allocate $2 million of that. So the first wave of those intentions were due Monday the 10th, to where we report a form of up to four entities to put that money towards. And we could either pick a specific project at this point, or we could have picked a specific area where we want to house those funds. And the News Review went through, you know, I think a good process there and kind of laid out how that process works. And they have some details in it. I can just tell folks that I chose to go the route of housing some funds. And so we're working right now to set up with Douglas County, Lane County, special districts, which are different taxing districts that some have not been in with some of these ARPA funds. So I wanted to reach down to another level that hadn't received some of these funds. And Umpqua Community College is in-house District 7, so listed them as one of the entities to receive money for the Umpqua Community College. I'm looking at hoping to support scholarships to actual individuals, particularly in technical training, whether that's dental assisting or truck driving school, you know, something that leads direct to jobs within 4 to 6 or 12 months period of time. We have until 2024 to spend these monies. And so that's all being formulated. The interesting part is we don't have all the final rules on how it can be spent yet.
And more about that will be available, well, is available if you check out yesterday's edition of the News Review. Last week, a gun-related legislation passed. What were your thoughts?
So there was a couple of, well, more than a couple, but two, what I would say, major gun-related bills that came through the legislature. And those got combined into one bill, and that is the Senate Bill 554 that does a couple of things. It requires what they call, quote-unquote, safe storage, and then it does restrict some carry rights, even if you have a concealed permit to carry in certain areas, like the state capitol, for example. And so that is almost assured to pass and have the governor sign that bill. I was opposed to it. I think there are some legal questions about the infringement on our Second Amendment rights. And of course, we know that that takes a long time to go through the court system, but there are some challenges currently at the federal level that are expected to be heard at the Supreme Court that may give us some defining information on Senate Bill 554 and could potentially remove some of the restrictions in that bill. There may or may not be some legal wrangling in Oregon at the state level on whether that is constitutional to do that or not. And then I do note that the bill doesn't have an emergency clause, and so there is an opportunity if folks want to get signatures on that. It could potentially be forced back to a ballot vote.
State Representative Cedric Hayden from Salem, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.